What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
A team of savvy tax lawyers to set up your own offshore account, you don't. In just a few simple steps, you can legally set up what's known as a shell company. That is a company that exists only on paper. There's no office and no employees. So your first step, you need to do an internet search. Type in the words offshore company and then choose from the many providers who can then help you set up your very own business. It's not free. For a fee that starts at around $900, they can help you set up your very own company in a country of your choice. Your next step, you need to nominate a director. Now this is a person whose name will appear on all of the company paperwork. They don't actually have any real power. Crucially, what they're there for is to make sure that the real owner of the firm, their identity, remains disguised. During the process, you're going to be asked for some form of identification, a passport, and also proof of address. Increasingly, many offshore banks are also asking for other documents, such as bank statements and payslips, to verify that the account is going to be used for legitimate reasons. But depending on local laws, your identity will never be revealed. Then finally, once the paperwork is all processed, which usually takes just a couple of days, you're done. Congratulations, you are the owner of a new shell company. And it's completely legal, but it's not for everyone. They're useful for people who work and live abroad, and also for people and companies who want to centralise and streamline their cash flow. They only become illegal if the company engages in criminal activity.
Reporter Jake Bernstein helped break the story of the Panama Papers. Those were the leaked documents detailing the offshore tax havens of the super rich. His new book is Secrecy World, Inside the Panama Papers Investigation of Illicit Money Networks and the Global Elite. Jake, this has all been such a mystery to so many of us. We've heard about all these offshore accounts. We've heard about all of this secret dealing. Tell us how large this world that many of us just have no insight into. How big is this?
It's massive. I mean, the phrase the secrecy world encompasses an entire shadow economy, right? It includes tax havens like the British Virgin Islands and the Seychelles and Jersey, but also places that offer secret bank accounts like Switzerland or Singapore. And then there's a whole army of intermediaries that offer these services. So accountants and lawyers and company incorporators and tax professionals and family planners. And then, you know, dollar figures are, well, they're huge. I mean, there's just in the United States, by one estimate, we lose about $70 billion a year in tax revenue from shifting corporate profits to tax havens. That's just corporate profits. So personal profits add more, you know, many more billions. And then in the world overall, I mean, the developing world loses between $620 billion and $970 billion in illicit outflows annually. So the numbers are huge. The people involved are, you know, legion. And this is completely secret in the sense that, you know, this world exists, but most Americans don't really see it or don't recognize it when they do. Because the reality is that we're all dealing with this, right? I mean, if anyone is trying to buy an apartment in New York or Miami or Los Angeles and complaining about how expensive it is, well, part of the reason is because of anonymous companies and foreigners coming in and buying up these apartments secretly as investment properties. If people complain that there isn't enough money for infrastructure or healthcare or police, part of that is because there is rampant tax avoidance and tax evasion going on through this offshore system.
By the way, I have to ask you this. We just went through what is called tax reform. It's really more tax cuts and just a tinge of reform. Were any of the concerns that you talked about in your book, Secrecy World, or anything revealed in Panama Papers, because we've heard about repatriation of money and the fact that we're trying to get back some money, but is this at all related to what you've been writing about or no?
It is, and this is one of the great promises, right? From this round of tax rejiggering, right, is that they're going to lower the corporate tax rate to 21%, and that's on repatriated money, right? So companies will take all this money that they're housing offshore and they'll bring it back. But the thing is that if you are a company and you are paying, you know, as little as 8% in tax or maybe even 0%. On money that you're holding offshore, why would you bring it back for 21% tax? You know, there are sort of some reasons why you might do that, right? Maybe you want to pay out dividends or you want to pay down debt, and bringing it back to the United States would allow you to do that. But for many companies, the calculation is going to be, do we keep this money offshore and pay little or no tax, or do we bring it back and pay 21% tax? And I suspect that not as much money will be repatriated as has been promised.
But people might listen to this and say to themselves, well, everybody wants to be part of the American economy. We're the giant. And so you can't get that money back into the United States unless you clean it up and pay taxes on it. But that's not the case. I mean, even in your prologue, you talk about this prosperous shipping company executive in Mexico who had a problem and how he used shell companies and these secret accounts and was able really to buy real estate in the United States. So how much does it really keep someone from being part of the American economy by going offshore?
I think you put your finger on it, in that they're not... You know, these people do not think in terms of the American economy or the Mexican economy or they're what we've really seen created in the past decade or two is this sort of transnational oligarchy. You know, you have a house in New York, but you also have a house in London and you have a house on the Riviera or
you live on your plane.
You live on your plane and you don't. You may make your money in the United States, but you don't look at the United States in the same way as someone, you know, who's a wage earner and who lives here year round. You know, and you use this system. You use smart lawyers and accountants to pay as little tax as possible, and you incorporate companies in the Caymans or in the British Virgin Islands or in different places like that. And you layer stuff so you have trusts and foundations and anonymous shell companies. And it makes it very hard for anyone on the outside to figure out exactly what you're doing or where the money's destined or who exactly you're supposed to pay tax to. The idea of an American economy for huge multinational companies or the uber wealthy is sort of a fiction at this point.
We'll return to this episode of America Trends in just a moment. If you like what we're doing here at America Trends Podcast, please don't keep it to yourself. I know there are a lot of people, John, who think, well, if I'm listening and somebody else wants to listen at the same time, maybe we're going to collide and they're not going to be able to hear us.
Yeah.
Is that the way the technology works?
No, there's plenty of bandwidth. Everybody can listen at the same time.
All right. Well, that dispels that myth. Now, you can do a number of things that would really be helpful to us. You could give us a kind rating or a review at Apple Podcasts, and that boosts what they consider to be our value and visibility. And what does that do, John?
Well, that puts us in the forefront so that you can find us easier, and most important is other people can find us easier.
And you can subscribe there or on our site, americatrendspodcast.com, or wherever you're listening, so we can alert you to new episodes of the podcast, which, by the way, we put out twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And stay in touch with us on both Facebook and Twitter at Trends Podcast. Or you can like us on Facebook or follow us where, John?
On Twitter.
On Twitter. That's right. We're the world turns to hear fake news or whatever it is. Well,
not
you can
us,
direct message
us
at Trends Podcast or using hashtag Trends Podcast. And you know, John, with our growing audience, and really it's been pretty remarkable, a lot of people just came to us the last month or two, and they might have missed earlier episodes. Can they get them again?
They can look through them and pick the ones they want to listen to. They're all on the website, and a lot of them are up on iTunes, many of them.
All right. Well, listen, there's lots of material to listen to. We hope you have the time, and we'll lend it to us because we try to make it worth your while. And thanks so much for listening.
And tell your friends.
We now return to this episode of America Trends.
When we look at the group that was helping to make all these shell companies real and to move all this money around, Mossack Fonseca, and then there's other groups, of course. There's another one involved with Bermuda that a lot of people like to use. How important are they to this shadowy world that we're talking about?
Well, Mossack Fonseca was one of the top five incorporators, in its heyday. They were a huge global operation. They end up releasing more than 240,000 anonymous shell companies into the wild. So they were a significant player. We end up seeing a leak of well in excess of 11.5 million documents, which cover, a period of 30, 40 years. So they had a big impact, but they are just one of a number of them. I mean, Appleby, which is the one in Bermuda that you mentioned, there was a new leak that came out in November called the Paradise Papers. And that's sort of centered around Appleby, is another big player. It wasn't as big a player as Mossack Fonseca. It had a different approach and a different sort of slice of the market, if you will. But there are a lot of players in this, and it's a thriving business.
How do we separate the very wealthy here in America who never go and use the shell companies and these secret bank accounts versus those who do? I mean, are we to label one group a lot less honest than the other, or is it this, that they are both taking advantage of various laws and customs and so forth, but they're doing it in different ways?
Well, it's so interesting, and there's been some interesting academic work on this recently that had looked at, I think they were focused actually on Scandinavian countries, but they noticed that the further up you went on the income ladder, so when you got to the truly wealthy, the wealthiest people in society, they actually used this offshore system more than anyone else. So 50% of the wealth held in tax havens belongs to households with more than $50 million in net wealth. So it seems like the people who are just sort of millionaires, perhaps, or the
millionaire next door,
are not really using this system in the way that people who have maybe $50 million or more. And what's so interesting about Mossack Fonseca, the Panamanian law firm behind the Panama Papers, is that their vision was high volume, low cost. So they kind of saw themselves to some degree as a McDonald's of the offshore world.
Well, they created, 200,000 shell companies?
Yeah, almost 240,000. But they hit the market at a particular time, right, where there was a growing middle class or, new wealth in the developing world, which they were tapping into. And they were trying to make this system available to lots and lots of people. I think that because of inequality, growing inequality, and in part because of these leak investigations shining a light on this system, that it is being driven more into the shadows, but it is also the bar to entry is higher now. So you have to be really, really wealthy in order for a Swiss banker or a lawyer to really work hard to bend the rules so that you can avoid paying your taxes at the highest level.
these very, very wealthy individuals, how are they being consulted in order to do this? In other words, does it come from a tax accountant first who says, you know, I really think at this point, given what you've amassed, we really should move a lot of your money offshore to the Caymans, to here, to there? Explain how that conversation goes.
Yeah, I mean, it is absolutely, I think, accountants and lawyers and, you know, family planners of certain kind. And there's a whole industry that sort of does this. They find each other. They're practiced at it. They go to conferences and discuss ways to do it and different sort of strategies for gaming the system. You can see it in the Panama Papers. There's this wonderful story about they go to some junior people in the law firm go to one of the top lawyers and they say, we're going to do this conference in, I think it was the Bahamas, and we're going to teach people how to evade taxes. And we've got these great brochures about how to do it, and it's geared towards the American market. But we're afraid because we have to travel through the U.S., and if customs sees these brochures explaining how to evade taxes, you know, we're going to get into trouble. And the lawyer says, well, I've dealt with this before. Don't worry about it in the least. The trick is you send the brochures to the hotel where the conference is happening in the Bahamas. That way you can go through customs and you don't actually have the brochures on you. So, I mean, this is sort of well-trodden ground. There's lots of people who do this business and know how it works and know that you can set up a foundation in Panama and a trust in Jersey and get a BVI a shell company, and you can bind all three of them and you can do all kinds of wonderful things to avoid paying taxes. And maybe you are paying taxes and you just want to keep your activities completely secret from your business partners or your wife or whoever. I mean, there are lots of different reasons why you could be doing this.
Why is it that the U.S. IRS has been rather ineffectual in stamping out some of the abuses? Because I think somebody listening to this might say, well, let's just stop this. I mean, we know that a lot of people make a lot of money as American citizens. Why can't we do a better job of figuring out how to keep it here?
That's a great question. I have a chapter in my book, Secrecy World, about this IRS agent named Joe West, who was one of the first people to really do an offshore exam. He went after this guy who was a fairly big manufacturer in New Jersey and who was hiding a lot of his activities offshore. And it took West a while, but he sort of cracked the case and proved what the guy was doing and ended up getting back millions of dollars in taxes that had been evaded. And his supervisors thought that he had done such a good job that they agreed to allow him to sort of launch a research project, you know, really look at the system, figure out how Americans are evading taxes and how we can combat it.
Mm-hmm.
And he spent a number of months and he talked to everybody. He talked to offshore bankers. He talked to the NSA. He talked to the State Department. He talked to the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development. He talked to all kinds of people, and he came up with a whole menu of different strategies. And the IRS ended up only using one of them. And the one they did had some success. But West ends up retiring early because it was so frustrating, the bureaucracy and the unwillingness of his superiors to really embrace this activity and to do what they needed to do. I mean, the reality is that the IRS has been savaged in recent years by the Republican Congresses. I mean, their budgets have been slashed. Enforcement has been crippled. You know, it's been hobbled, essentially. And so that has an impact. And then they're risk averse. You know, they don't want to invest a lot of time, you know, going after this kind of behavior and come up empty-handed. And it's very hard. I mean, the tax havens themselves don't cooperate very much with, you know, federal government inquiries. And you really need a massive leak in order to figure out what's going on. So it's difficult for them. And then there's sort of a lack of will and institutional capability to really prosecute it.
Now, these shell companies that are established, they need to end up parking their money in some secret bank accounts, or maybe not so secret. Recently, when we saw where Deutsche Bank was being asked to give up a lot of information in the investigation related to Russia and Donald Trump and the administration, is Deutsche Bank one of those banks that is more, well, in league with some of this shell activity going on around the world? Or are there certain banks that are known to be complicit in a lot of this?
Yeah, there, I mean, a number of the top banks are. And Deutsche Bank is certainly present in the Panama Papers. Another two banks that were active users of this system and actually helped their clients set up these kinds of companies were the British bank HSBC and the Swiss bank UBS.
And HSBC, I think, has been involved in a lot of illicit drug-running monies as well, commingled in all of this.
Absolutely. They were big players in this. And the Swiss banks in general were big players in this. And the Swiss banking secrecy has changed radically since 2009, mm-hmm. when Bradley Birkenfeld and the UBS cases really start happening. Now they will give up names of Americans, but there are ways around that. If you have enough money, they might set up an account for you in their Singapore branch. And that way they'll give the Americans the information about who has money in Geneva, but maybe not in Singapore. Or if you have enough money, they'll allow you to draw it down, and maybe there's only a few $100,000 left, and then they'll close the account and report that to the foreign government. So there's different sort of strategies. It's still very much going on. What happens is you have to think about this offshore system almost as a living organism that evolves and adapts to continue its activities. So, for example, Jersey, which is a tax haven in the off the coast of England, or the British Virgin Islands, they might actually clean up their activities a little bit, add a little bit more transparency. And as a reaction to that, people who want to continue to behave in this way will move to Dubai or Singapore or places that are even more opaque. So we see a lot of that happening.
How fluid is this world? I mean, does it just keep evolving and trying to get one step ahead of the regulators? Is that what we're seeing around the world?
It's amazingly fluid, and that is exactly what we're seeing. And what's so amazing about the Panama Papers is that over 30 or 40 years, you can actually see this in the files. So, for example, bearer shares are sort of endlessly fascinating to me because these are certificates, pieces of paper, where if you have the certificate physically, you hold the certificate, you own the company. So governments hate this, right? Because they're tailor-made for money laundering, right? The company has assets, it has a bank account, it has real estate, it has whatever. And all I have to do is give you this piece of paper, and suddenly you own the bank account, and you own the real estate, and you own the assets. So governments have tried to clamp down on this. And some tax havens have forbid them altogether. Others have put them under custodianship. So basically, the certificate goes into a safe, and the safe is owned by a lawyer or a banker, and the banker and the lawyer have to know exactly who actually owns the certificate, right? But what we see in the Panama Papers is BVI clamps down on these bearer shares, and then you can see a spike in incorporations of shell companies in Panama, where they still allow bearer shares because people want this thing, right? And so it moves around. And just sort of as a coda to this story, there are only two jurisdictions left that still allow bearer shares: the Marshall Islands and Liberia. They're the only ones. And guess where the public registries for the Marshall Islands and Liberia are based? New York City and Virginia.
Well, let me ask you, because, yeah, everything was offshore there for a while. But Delaware, of course, where all kinds of corporations are born and raised, but not actually performing within the confines of little Delaware. Tell us about America on our own soil, how much of this activity might be soiling America within.
It's huge. I mean, Delaware gets more than $1 billion a year from its business registry. That's just sort of selling these anonymous shell companies. And they're not the only ones. I mean, Nevada and Wyoming are also big players in this.
And what do they get from this? The registration fees? What is it that...
That's exactly what they get. They get the registration fees.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's such a lucrative business for Delaware and for other states, the secretaries of states have been passionate advocates and lobbyists for this business. And they have fought tooth and nail against efforts to reform it in Congress. And I don't think it's sort of a surprise that... Joe Biden was from Delaware, the former vice president and senator. I mean, the people in Delaware and other states that do this business have been very good at keeping it alive and thriving. The State Department itself and the UN have complained that Delaware companies are being used by Russian mafia and transnational gangs for money laundering and other illegal activities. But they have had little impact on fixing it.
I know that you were part of an international consortium of investigative journalists when you reported on the Panama Papers. Why is there no international consortium of legitimate governments trying really to work in tandem? I guess one of the answers would be apparent in your book, because when you talk about the cast of characters involved in this, prime ministers of Iceland and Pakistan, you've got a lot of major players in Russia and Spain, Azerbaijan. I mean, this is going on across the globe, and I guess some of the most powerful people in the world are trying to protect the system that has been built in this shadowy way.
I think that's a big part of it. There has been more cooperation. And in part, I think because of these leak investigations has created public pressure, but also because there's suddenly this wealth of material when governments can get a hold of it, so that they can collaborate on it themselves. But the level of collaboration that the journalists managed to pull off is really still a dream for governmental tax authorities and prosecutors. I mean, that's for sure.
But what have they done in response to all that you have reported? I mean, how much have they really said, all right, this is a moment in time. There's so much money that is being lost, so many opportunities for us to fund things here in our public space. How many of them have really, I have not heard an outcry for this.
In the United States, less than in Europe. And I think there's probably a few reasons for that, right? I mean, one is that after the financial crisis, Europe really embarked on this whole, wave of austerity, dramatic cutbacks on social services. And so people were acutely aware, almost overnight, that the money had dried up. And so when they found out that their fellow citizens, the very wealthy among them, were not paying their taxes, they took it quite personally. We haven't quite got to that point yet here. And I think that, this idea of fairness, that there is that the game is rigged in some way, that, that the uber wealthy amongst us are playing by different rules, I think that has influenced things in this country in ways large and small. I mean, I think that was part of the impetus for many people who supported Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, this sort of feeling that something was broken, that the system was rigged. I think it has existed, but you're right. The government has been largely ineffectual. And part of that is systemic and structural. The Obama administration sat on rules for several years, for banks to find out who were behind the anonymous shell companies that were opening accounts. And when they came out with their rules, they were drastically watered down. And the reason was is lawyers and bankers and secretaries of state all lobbied fiercely to make sure that the rules were largely toothless. So. Yeah, I mean it's a big problem, and it's going to require a lot of public attention and a concerted effort to bring more transparency to this space.
Now, you go pretty deep into the Trump administration, and there's just a whole list of people who are part of the cabinet who have offshore accounts that were uncovered in either the Paradise or the Panama Papers. What are we going to see from this story going forward? And are a lot of people going to be disappointed, ultimately, to find out that the game that was rigged by people who they thought were going to unrig the game in the United States?
I think that realization is dawning, you know, as we speak. I mean, it was sort of always there in plain sight. I mean, Donald Trump himself admitted on the campaign trail that he had 515 companies, 378 of them registered in Delaware. What I found in the Panama Papers were nine of his business partners. They're mentioned in various ways. And as you look at them, a picture emerges of the kind of people that Donald Trump was doing business with. And these are people who have been accused of tax evasion in their own countries, or prostitution, or corruption in Africa. One of them of doing business with the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. I mean, there's all kinds of issues, and it's all about the fact that they can hide their activities through this offshore system. So yes, I think that people are going to start to put the, you know, connect the dots, so to speak, as more of this information comes out. Because I think one of the things that these leaks show is that you can't keep this stuff secret forever. You know, some of it will come out, and that secrecy is not quite as easy as it used to be now that we're in the digital age.
And the Paul Manafort case, and the potential that a lot of what's going on with him is going to expose a lot of this, because he was involved in I don't know how many companies.
Well, it's fascinating, because Manafort is doing his business, or some of his business through Cyprus, and Cyprus is a member of the European Union, but it is one of the worst tax havens. I mean, truly extraordinary, and they're trying to clean up their act a little bit, but I mean, I was told in if you wanted to create a Cyprus company, and I don't know if this is still true, but it certainly was until recently, you could open an anonymous shell company in Cyprus, and it would come with a bank account pre-attached. So you didn't even actually have to go and open up the bank account.
Everyone's into convenience these days.
Yes, and completely secret. So yes, I mean, no surprise that Manafort was there. And Cyprus has long been a destination for Russian money, for Russian offshoring. And in fact, a lot of the activity that we saw around Vladimir Putin was going through Cyprus.
Yeah, you get into Vladimir Putin in detail in the book, and really people need to get this book, Secrecy World, Inside the Panama Papers Investigation of Illicit Money Networks and the Global Elite. Before you go, for somebody who might have a trust here in the United States that's all legit and says, well, does this trust keep me from doing anything with my money? The fact that people have to launder all this money through these secret accounts and the like, does that limit their flexibility in what they can do with money that they have earned either appropriately or in whatever fashion? Is it a limiting factor having to put it through all of these strainers?
I mean, it generally isn't. I mean, obviously, the less money you have, you know, if you're having to spend it on people who are running your trust and lawyers and accountants and stuff, that sucks up some of your money. I mean, again, this is really only something that makes sense for the mega wealthy. There's that, but it is true that all too often regulators have a one-size-fits-all approach to this kind of stuff. You know, the reality is that we should be paying attention, the IRS and others, you know, to the people who have more than $50 million, you know, who are truly wealthy, you know, and should not be harassing the small business owner, you know, should not be harassing the person who has managed to put together, you know, some money that they can give to their children, or provide a better life for themselves. There isn't enough perspective
on this. And that's because the mega wealthy are the ones who are writing the rules.
I'd like you to reprise in the last couple of moments what you said, I think, at the beginning, and it might have gone past us all because we were all trying to focus our heads around the content that was to come. And it's not easy to get your arms around some of this, and that's why they do it. So, but help us to understand why someone listening to this podcast should care about this in terms of what it denies us here in the United States by virtue of all of this game playing and all this secrecy.
Sure. I mean, the people think that this is something that's happening in a tax haven far away in some sunny place or, you know, in Switzerland, that this only really affects people who are super wealthy, and so it really doesn't matter to me. And that is the farthest thing from the truth. The reality is that if you want to buy an apartment in a major city, part of the reason why property prices are so high is because foreigners are coming in using these anonymous shell companies and buying those properties as investments or perhaps to hide illegal activities. Or if you look around you and our infrastructure is crumbling or there isn't, or the government says there isn't enough money for healthcare or for police or for whatever, part of the reason is that the truly wealthy are using this system to avoid paying taxes. Corporations are using this system to avoid paying taxes. The United States, by one estimate, loses $70 billion a year in tax revenue from shifting corporate profits to tax havens. So this is a system that is creating the world around us. It's happening in a hidden way, so we don't really see it, but we are seeing the impact of it. We are living the impact.
Jake Bernstein, I can't thank you enough for being with us today on America Trends. The book is called Secrecy World, and we'll look for continuing reports on this and greater sunlight being brought to this issue. Thank you once again.
No, thank you so much, Larry.